Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Oh, what a precious little boy you have, cooed the lady at the checkout counter.
Thanks, replied Jan, unloading her groceries while keeping 2-year-old Ian supplied with handfuls of trail mix.
What gorgeous red hair, the cashier exclaimed, eyeing Ian. Wish I had hair that color. Must be somebody in your family who gave you that lucky gene.
Well, actually, Jan looked up from the filled conveyor belt, my son is adopted.
Adopted? Oh, I see.
The cashier was quiet for a moment.
You know, a cousin of mine adopted a kid. He turned out okay. He had a lot of questions when he got to school age, though.
Ian had just downed another handful of his snack and had tuned into the conversation.
What's adopted, Mommy?
From a parent's perspective, how can we best support the emotional and intellectual development of an adopted child? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest works with children of all ages and their families. Dr. Mark Nemiroff is a child psychologist in private practice in Potomac, Maryland. He's on the core faculty in the Washington School of Psychiatry's Infant and Young Children Mental Health Program and on the clinical faculty of George Washington University's Doctor of Psychology Program. He is an affiliate member of the Baltimore Washington Society for Psychoanalysis. Dr. Nemiroff is also the author of a number of books for young children pertaining to normative development as well as clinical issues, the most recent being Sex and Babies, First Facts, The Very Lonely Bathtub, and All About Adoption, How Families Are Made and How Kids Feel About It, written also with Jane Annunziata. Dr. Nemiroff is married and the father of a grown son. Welcome back to Parents' Perspective, Dr.
Nemiroff. It's a pleasure to be with you.
What's the most prevalent myth we have about adoption?
It's actually two-sided. One is we often make assumptions that there is something automatically wrong with an adopted child. And the other is the minimizing that adoption is not an issue. And people do one of the two things. The additional myth is that we think about the child only as being adopted as opposed to the family as being an adoptive family, almost as if the child adopted the family as much as the family adopted the child.
That's interesting. That stands that whole notion of stranger in our midst on its head, doesn't
it? That's exactly what I'm trying to do, yes.
What's the biggest challenge parents of adopted children face? We know the kids face challenges. What about the parents?
I think one of the hardest things is no matter how well-intentioned a parent may be and no matter how well a parent explains adoption to a child starting very early, the child still has questions repeatedly throughout development, not necessarily troubled questions, but that the issue is not something that goes away. It's not something that's explained once and then
you're done.
It's done.
The child, in other words, is able to integrate the information in different ways and in different depths as he or she progresses.
It's both needing a little more information, a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time, more and more, and being ready to hear more and about being confronted with different questions from siblings and different life situations that present themselves that revive the adoption issues. As youngsters experience different things in their lives at different issues, what's on the mind of a 4-year-old and a 14-year-old is not the same, but the resonances of adoption can arise for both of them. And it's very hard for a parent sometimes to know how to gauge a response to a youngster like that, as well as feeling a little bit frustrated. Didn't we already talk about this? I'd like to put this to rest. Because parents, of course, want to put it to rest. They don't want a youngster to be bothered by it. And yet the questions do keep coming up.
Reminds me of that kind of squiggle that we draw. It loops back upon itself and keeps going.
That's right. Because part of a child's identity, and this is sometimes hard, is of being adopted. That doesn't mean it's a problem at all, but I am adopted, I have blue eyes, I am left-handed. It's simply it's a fact, and it's something that gets incorporated into a youngster's identity and then into an adult's identity, not necessarily as a problem, but just as an existential fact of who they are.
Does a child's age at adoption make a difference?
Yeah, I think it makes a great deal of difference. For me, I think most of us in the field believe that the ideal adoption is from the delivering uterus to the waiting adoptive family's hands immediately in the hospital, so that the real parents, who are the adoptive parents, are there from minute one. When you have later adoptions, 5 years old, 10 years old, you then have a history that a child has experienced that you haven't had any control over, that you may not know much about, or that there may have been suffering.
What kinds of potential hurdles might adopted children have to overcome?
It depends on the age. You know, one of the interesting things is when there are infant adoptions, like I just mentioned, there are things that we really wouldn't think of that as hurdles, and yet in a physiological, neonate way, they are. There are questions of changes in smells, changes in the textures of what's around a youngster, the change in the feel of the mother's skin, the change of the sounds, a cat in the house, a dog in the house. Those are all changes that register on an infant that we would not ordinarily think of.
This is an infant who would have been in a house before adoption, or an infant in utero? You're saying?
Not in Europe. I'm talking now about a later adoption. It could be several months old. It could have been a youngster who is with a birth mother who then felt that she really can't do this job well and wants to find help in finding a better home for the youngster, or a youngster who has been in some kind of facility for some reason. The facility issue is also different, because a youngster is going from being one of several to being one.
Do adopted children have a higher incidence of problems related to learning, attention deficit, et cetera, than the general public? That's sort of a stereotype that you hear.
It is a stereotype. And the answer is, I suspect that they don't have a higher incidence, but it looks like they do have a higher incidence, because we see them in our offices clinically. We see a fair number, I think a higher percentage of adopted children than of other children. That doesn't necessarily mean because they're adopted they have learning disabilities and so on.
You think that the adoptive parents, their antenna are up more for issues?
I think that's true. And there are other factors that are not necessarily related to adoption, but sometimes come with adoption, like prenatal care. And the level of prenatal care can have something to do with the etiology of learning disabilities. And that can happen to a biological child within a home or an adopted child within a home. But often adopted children have poor prenatal care. What I'm trying to get at here is, it's not because the youngster is adopted that he's having those problems, but because of some of the other aspects of his earlier life or a prenatal that have something to do with it.
An impulsive mother might be someone who has an unwanted pregnancy and gives up a child for adoption, and that mother may be indeed a person with lots of learning disabilities, the birth mother.
Yeah, absolutely, right. And you might expect it perhaps with teenage mothers, impulsive teenage mothers. And we know certain kinds of impulsivity and attentional problems go from family member to family member. But they would also in a biological, non-adoptive family as well.
Which approaches have you found most successful in explaining to a young child that he or she is adopted? And how young do you begin?
There's a nice book about that, as I remember.
I think you incorporate the idea of adoption into a child's life as soon as the child is old enough to understand even a little bit of where he came from. I don't mean the facts of sex, but just children come into families, and they come in different ways. Some are born in their mom's tummy and the mom that they're living with now, and some are born in other mom's tummies and now are living in our house. As very simple as that, and that can be as young as a two-year-old, I think, can understand something like
that. So that little boy at the checkout counter.
That's exactly
right. Right age.
And it becomes part of just who he is. As straightforward as possible is what children need. Children know, even very young children, know when you're hedging, and they know when you don't want to tell them something. They know when you're uncomfortable, and they know when you're distorting. And so it's very important to be as forthright and direct as possible, and yet to gear it to the age It's the old story. The little boy asks, where did I come from? And gets the whole story and then asks, are there any questions? And said, yes, Johnny came from Chicago. Where did I come from? That's all right. He wanted to know. So you have to be very careful that you give just the right amount in very simple language. Something like, it takes a birth mom and a birth dad to make a baby. And some birth moms and birth dads continue to raise their babies in their families. And some feel that they can't do the best job of taking care of their kids. And so they find families where their kids can be taken care of. It's very straightforward and it's true. One surprising fact that you might want to know is that in the latest information that I've been looking at, 60% of American families have direct contact in one way or another with adoption. Either they've been adopted themselves, or they have adopted, or they have an adopted relative, or they know someone who's adopted. So the prevalence of at least familiarity with adoption is very widespread.
Is this more than it used to be, or we're just more aware than we used to be?
I suspect it's more than it used to be because of the prevalence of international adoptions now, and that couples are starting their families older, and there are often infertility problems older, and so adoption becomes an option earlier in a couple's process.
So it really means that when we're talking about adopted children, it pertains to all of us. We're going to come in contact with an adopted child as a teacher or as a checkout lady or something, so that we all sort of need to be aware of the issues.
Absolutely. And we're going to find people who have names like Deborah Cohen, who are fully Japanese.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on adoption and how kids feel about it.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Mark Nemiroff about adoption and how kids feel about it. What are the most frequent questions children hear from their peers about adoption, speaking of everybody sort of in this game together?
Most children actually don't get asked a lot of questions about adoption, at least not in my experience, not from the patients that I see. The adoption is their issue. It's really not other children's issue very much, except when there's a really notable physical difference, which is what your story was at the beginning of the program. And then they ask, why don't you look like your mom and dad? And the very simple answer is, because I'm adopted. Sometimes parents worry that a child will be asked, why were you adopted? It is not my experience that other children ask that, because there's been enough familiarity with adoption that the answer, because I'm adopted, speaks for itself. And there really isn't more to say, because there are probably five other adopted kids in the same class.
But a child, it sounds like, may have questions of his or her own. Why was I adopted?
Absolutely.
Why was I given up? Did I do something wrong?
Absolutely. In some way, that's an unending question, even though it feels like it's put to rest at any given time in development, and parents work very hard to put it to rest. It's something that keeps coming back, because there is a rock bottom understanding on the part of a child that somebody didn't keep him. What we try to help youngsters understand is that it had nothing to do with him. It had to do with the birth parents, who were unable to take good care of a youngster, and so did their best to arrange that he would find a family where he would be well loved and well taken care of. Youngsters do wonder, was there something wrong with me? There's no question. Does every adopted child think that? No, but I've never met an adopted child who didn't have the question, why didn't they keep me?
You know what, I was just thinking, I don't know that this would be helpful for young children who are dealing with this, but it would seem to me if you had, I'm not advocating this, I want to tell you, but if you had a situation where you had a cat or a dog that had a litter of little ones, and you couldn't keep the whole litter because you just couldn't keep them all, if an adopted child would be able to make any kind of connection like that.
The problem with that approach, and I want to come back to the issue of pets because it's a really good issue, but the problem with what you're describing is how do you select who you give away? And you really don't want to go there. Mm. On the other hand, in working with adopted children, the useful side of pets, for adopted children to adopt a pet is a very lovely thing and helps them kind of master the idea of wanting something to love and finding it, which is closer to what you want to teach them. In my experience, when we've done this with adopted children, a number of them, they go to the Humane Society and they look, which is the best place to go, rather than purchasing a dog somewhere, but to go to the Humane Society where there are dogs waiting to be loved, or cats. A number of youngsters have purposely selected older animals who need help. It's very interesting, and it speaks to both something lovely in the child, but also the abiding concern.
Dr. Nemiroff, we've been talking about different stages and different times in children's lives. When is it time, or how do parents know when it's time to revisit some of these issues about adoption? How can you tell if your child is concerned again and needs to talk some more?
There are two different answers to that question. One of those is developmental, that there are certain developmental periods in a person's life when a child is vulnerable to the need to know more about adoption in a different way. And then there are other things where children are giving signs that it's on their mind, irrespective of how old they might be. Developmentally, it needs to be discussed when given a non-infant adoption. When a child is first adopted, the beginning of kindergarten often raises adoption issues because kindergarten itself is about separation and about leaving your family and going off to school. And for some reason, kindergarten has a larger importance in both parents' and children's minds than preschool. Mm. And so it automatically comes up again because I'm leaving my family and I left my original family such as it was. Another is puberty, because of the general upheaval and everything comes up in puberty. But the whole issue of sex and reproduction and sexual activity comes up. And there's a particular vulnerability here, because many adopted children are the children of teenage parents. And they usually know that, and they should know some of the background to some extent of where they came from. Teenage girls who were the product of teenage pregnancies are at risk of becoming pregnant themselves when they are teenagers as a way of trying to master, relive, make sense of their own adoption. They kind of do it over. And it's relatively common, and it's something for us to be aware of. And I think the more we talk about adoption starting as early as possible in the child's life, the greater foundation we give them so that they don't feel the need to repeat like that, because we don't want repetition of teenage pregnancies. Another time is in early adulthood, when again, separation, who am I, where am I going, what decisions am I going to make for my life? Who am I entails where did I come from? And it's at that period when you most often find young adult adoptees questioning whether they want to find their birth parents. Some do and some don't. Some say they want to, and they don't follow through. Mm. But it's at that point when you find it. Some of the other signs, I hesitate to call them warning signs, but they're just instances of behaviors that children might show you where a parent might be aware that something is on the youngster's mind. For example, a youngster who previously managing even small changes in the house, all of a sudden gets very upset because the furniture has changed. This is a recent example that I had in my practice. Got very upset because the furniture was changed. And the parents didn't quite understand it. I wasn't quite sure myself, except I kind of wondered. And I asked them to ask him, what was really bothering him? And he said, I'm afraid you'll throw the sofa out.
Oh, my.
And
isn't that interesting?
There it is.
Yes.
It's displaced onto the furniture.
My. Yeah.
But there it is. Another example is when some youngsters, you see it often around age 11, will do things to suggest how much they don't like themselves. For example, putting their bike in the middle of the road to let it be run over when it was a recent gift from the parents for a birthday, to prove that what I have representing me is damaged.
Oh, my.
And they're indirect. It's very sad. They're indirect indicators that a youngster needs to talk. Another example would be, much more direct, would be a youngster who pulls away from an argument with a brother. It's going on the way siblings will argue with a biological child of the parents, and the adopted youngster pulls away and becomes very quiet. And parent needs to ask what happened. And one youngster told me, because I asked him what happened, he said, I'm not blood. This needs to be addressed right then. And he needs to understand yet again, even though he knew it at earlier stages in his life, that he is not less than, and he is an equal member of this family. And there's the example.
Are these signs that it's time to consult a professional rather than try to handle this just within your family?
Yeah, the changing the furniture, I think, can be handled within the family. These other examples, I think, are more extreme. They're not uncommon. Mm. I think then parents would do well to at least consult a professional about how to handle it themselves, or to see if it's a more lingering problem where a youngster needs treatment.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on adoption and how kids feel about it.
For an audio cassette copy of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Mark Nemiroff about adoption and how kids feel about it.
With all the issues that we've talked about, we haven't really touched on international adoptions. I know you mentioned it in passing before, but my assumption is that there are other issues that come with that that we haven't gotten to.
And they're on the rise. With international adoptions, they are almost always later. There are not, that I am aware of, neonatal adoptions internationally. They can be arranged neonatally. They can be arranged prenatally. But by the time all the paperwork goes on and the bureaucracy goes through and the red tape goes through, you don't have a neonate. You have a six-month-old or a one-year-old. And so you have a youngster who's been taken care of under situations you're not entirely clear what they are. And you have to contend with that. You may have to contend with health issues that you wouldn't ordinarily do. It's very frustrating for some parents because they know who their baby is. And the baby is in Bolivia, and they know the baby, and they've seen the baby, and they're waiting for the baby, and the baby needs medical care, and they can't do it. And it's very frustrating. It's not that the health problems can't be attended to once the youngster is here and attended to successfully. But the youngster's coming with health problems that wouldn't ordinarily happen. Later international adoptions, 5 years old, 10 years old, in my experience, most often there has been, at the least, neglect and often abuse and being cared for in large institutions. And so a youngster is coming with a history of harm and the potential for distrust. And it's much harder for those youngsters to make the adjustment, and it's harder for the parents. It really is Herculean and heroic for parents to adopt at that age because it requires a great deal of care and a great deal of patience.
It sounds like parents who are going to go that route probably need to key in with a professional pretty early in the game to get the support they would need.
I would go farther and say they should begin with a professional prophylactically even before they meet the youngster.
We want to talk a little bit about resources for our listeners, beginning, of course, with your new book written with Jane Annunziata, all about adoption, how families are made and how kids feel about it. And we're also wondering what other suggestions you might have for parents or families who want more information about adoption.
I have several suggestions, and I can't resist the opportunity to plug my publisher, because Imagination Press, which is a division of the American Psychological Association, has several other books on this topic, and they can be reached at www.apa.org. Having done that, there are three other organizations with websites, I think, that are very helpful. The Evan B. Donaldson Adoption Institute has a great deal of information on a very well-organized website at www.adoptioninstitute.org. They also have access to a journal called the Alliance for the Study of Adoption, Identity, and Kinship. Another resource is the Child Welfare League of America, which has a series of publications regarding adoption and other things. That's at www.cwla.org. And then the Barker Foundation, which is based in Washington, D.C., but has a national reputation, is very useful online for a variety of information and recommended books. And they're at www.barkerfoundation.org.
And it sounds to me also like parents who have adopted kids may want to connect with other parents. I know there are organizations that get together so that kids have the experience of being in a group with other children who are also adopted.
Yes, there are organizations, and even more specifically regarding international organizations, there are groups in certainly in major cities of families who have adopted children from Romania and from Taiwan and from Russia, so it's even more specific, and the cultural heritage can also be included.
How can parents find out about these organizations in their own home cities? Would they check with a pediatrician, most likely?
I would check with a pediatrician, and I might also contact one of these websites that I've mentioned, because they will have a Contact Us button on their menu, and they can be able to direct parents.
Well, Dr. Mark Nemiroff, thank you so much for being with us and helping to give parents who are listening a better feel for adopted children and their issues.
It's absolutely been my pleasure.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Dr. Nemiroff's book, All About Adoption, with Jane Annunziata. Please call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and mention show number 214. Tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Dr. Nemiroff's book, All About Adoption, is also available in bookstores and on the web. Also, our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, is also available at major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from Andy and Lewis Sachs. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.